Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Today, we're going to talk about how the massive new budget law signed on Friday by President Trump could seriously hurt environmental protections and the transition to renewable energy, a key step in the fight against the climate crisis. But first, we're going to look at new research from scientists at Trinity College Dublin. Their study shows that heat waves can have a big effect on how diseases spread, and that many current models don't fully take this into account. The researchers found that how hot a heat wave is, how long it lasts, and when it happens can change the impact of disease by up to 13 times in a common animal model. So to tell us more about the study, we're very pleased to be joined by Niamh McCartan, a PhD candidate at Trinity School of Natural Sciences in Dublin, and the lead author of the study called Impact of Heat Wave Amplitude, Duration, and Timing on Parasite Fitness at Different Baseline Temperatures. Thanks so much for joining us, Niamh. Great to have you on the show, and congrats on this important and timely study.
Hi, thank you for having me. Yeah, kind of just coincided that the whole world, well, the Northern Hemisphere is coincidentally going through a heat wave, so it's definitely come out at the right time.
Yeah, if you timed it well from a real-world impact perspective, definitely with the heat wave that's baking so much of the Northern Hemisphere, as you mentioned. And every year it does seem to be getting hotter than the previous year, and we're seeing the effects of a warming planet all around us, including the heat waves going on now. And right now, of course, wildfires fueled by extreme heat, strong winds, and dry conditions are also spreading across Greece, Turkey, and Syria. Here in the U.S., California is already seeing fires, and it's really just the beginning of summer. And your research now adds a whole other layer to the climate story by looking at how heat waves, like what we're experiencing this month, can affect the spread of disease. But before we just get into the details of that study, what do we already know just based on past research about the link between extreme heat and how diseases spread?
Yeah, so we know that temperature is a really important thing for all organisms in life. And this includes the kind of host-pathogen relationship. Temperature can mediate a lot of behaviors, both in the host and the parasite. So there's been a lot of work done, say, at different constant temperatures. So say picking a cold, a medium, and a hot, and then seeing how the behavior or whatever you're looking at is different at those temperatures. But when I was kind of looking and I was interested, I said, I'm really interested in heat waves because I knew that when we were starting to think of ideas and what to do, that I think we were also in a heat wave as well at the time. And I said, well, what, you know, kind of a heat wave is such a broad term. What really can you put that as an umbrella term when looking at the interactions with the hosts and the parasites? And there was some kind of work done looking at, say, a heat wave, but none that really went into kind of the in-depth, the attributes of the heat wave. So like you said, the intensity, the duration, even the timing of the heat wave in relation to when the host gets exposed. So there wasn't kind of a lot known about it, and there was a pretty big gap that I said, you know, this would be perfect. So we didn't really know where to begin. So that's why I ended up with, I think it was 64 different heat wave treatments, which looking back is kind of insane to do empirically. But we found then, you know, kind of that they're not all the same, and what could be happening if you put it into the real world, what's happening in Ireland might not be the same as in Southern Italy or California. And taking that approach, it kind of shows that this is a lot more, as I say, complicated. It's a lot of a more intricate picture when it comes to how temperature interacts with, like, well, in this case, the host and the parasite, but really how temperature itself and how those variations can alter that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, I take your point that it's going to be really tough given just the variety of geographies out there and climate zones. But given that you did look at so many heat events, it sounds like looked at 64 different ones. What were some of the key findings that you were able to discover from looking at those events?
Yeah, so what we did find anyway was that kind of towards With our host and parasite, they kind of have these different thermal tolerances. So where they're, you know, kind of where they can still function successfully. And the little water flea that we use kind of has a wider thermal tolerance than the parasite. So what we found was that when it gets too hot for the parasite but not for the host, it is detrimental to the parasite, and that's when it finds it's really hard to take hold and start the infection, but also to reproduce then when you're in the host itself. So at higher temperatures, actually, it was a decreased parasite fitness. But then at lower temperatures, kind of closer where the parasite was still viable, even these tiny little fluctuations that didn't need a big heat wave, they were perfect for the parasite to say, oh, we can reproduce really quickly because we're smaller than the host. So they were able to take hold of that that increase in temperature to where they like their optimal temperature. So it kind of shows that even these small little fluctuations can still have an impact. It's not just the big heat waves. And then on top of that, we also found that I had done previous research looking at not only heat waves, but cold snaps. So instead of amplifying the temperatures, we reduced them. And we found that heat waves and cold snaps, as you could kind of guess, they interact differently. So you have, say, higher temperatures in the heat wave that decreases parasite fitness, but actually in a cold snap, it increases parasite fitness, because if you have a hot temperature and it goes down to a cooler temperature, well, then that's perfect for the parasite. So it does make sense when we saw it. But the other thing that we also saw as well is that timing of the heat wave in relation to when the parasite was exposed to the host, that can also, or timing, yeah, timing of the heat wave, that can also affect how the parasite responds. So for example, we had a heat wave that was 20 days after exposure. So it had a lot of time to grow, but then once it was established, the heat wave kind of knocked it completely, and it didn't have enough time to reestablish until we stopped the experiment. So it still affected the parasite greatly. So kind of tying all of these things together, it shows that it really is context specific, and there's quite a lot of complex interactions when you take it as the bigger picture and try and tease it out. But you can kind of make these rough, not generalizations, but these rough patterns, and you can see them happening.
So is that a silver lining then, that the really extreme versions of heat that you tested and modeled indicates a reduction in parasitic transmission? I mean, given that we're seeing more of these extreme heat waves, is that a positive finding, or is the fact that just slight elevation in temperatures is leading to more infectious diseases the real problem here?
I think this is just the tip of the iceberg to be making kind of these generalizations. And ideally, it would be nice to hope that, you know, disease might be affected that way. But I think that it's a good starting point to kind of have a focus and see, this is one host and parasite interaction, but what happens with others? What happens with different hosts? What happens with, say, this was it's a microsporidian, which is kind of different than a bacteria, and it's different than a virus. So what happens if you use one of those and see what effects heat waves have on those? So I think it's a great talking point and kind of maybe to direct future studies. But I definitely think that as the world is really getting warmer and it's getting to insane temperatures, that it'll be interesting to see what actually happens with diseases in those areas. So hopefully, while I know that this is in the Daphnia system, I'm not sure if we could fully say yet that it's going to mean that all diseases are going to be reduced at higher temperatures.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Niamh McCartan, a PhD candidate at Trinity School of Natural Sciences in Dublin. Niamh is the lead author of a study called The Impact of Heat Wave Amplitude, Duration, and Timing on Parasite Fitness at Different Baseline Temperatures. This is Your Calls One Planet series, and I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. I want to go ahead and open up the phone lines. Are you concerned about infectious diseases and how they may get worse in an era of climate change? Do you have questions about what climate change could mean for the spread of infectious diseases? The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can send an email to us at yourcall@kalw.org. Niamh, I know other researchers have suggested that in the context of COVID-19 cases that happened in the summer of 2022, almost 70% of them potentially could have been avoided if there hadn't been heat waves going on in the world around that time. So I'm curious your reaction to that research and what you think that might say about the possibility of facing similar pandemics in the future because of climate change.
Yeah, I think I remember finding that paper and I thought it was really interesting to see that just so high a number that they kind of reported. And I kind of, you know, it didn't completely surprise me, you know, that when a heat wave happens, that kind of behaviors change and everybody's trying to huddle, maybe not huddle together, but trying to find colder pockets to get some relief from that heat wave. And that's when kind of more spreads can happen and everything like that. So I wasn't totally surprised. I was just more surprised at, you know, the numbers. But I think that, you know, in the future, we've had in the past, there's been a lot of epidemics and some of those have been linked to climate change. And I think that COVID, it wasn't the total surprise that it was to the general public. I remember when I was in my undergrad and I was reading and I said, no, like a pandemic is going to come along because you could just see that the trends were there. And that it was just by chance it was going to happen. But hopefully I think that if a pandemic happens in the future, we're going to be more prepared. And I don't think that it will have the same repercussions as COVID had. I think that hopefully, you know, we know what steps to take. So we'll be able to prepare more for it. But when it will happen, who knows? Hopefully not soon, because I'm still not over COVID yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think you and many others, I'm sure, listening as well feel that way. Well, given the findings of your study and some of the other research that you've done and looked at, which regions around the world do you think pathogens are most likely to spread given the changing climate and risk factors?
Yeah, I think that kind of the places mostly are, you know, if you're going from different climatic regions. So one of the big ones beside us is Southern Europe. That's what, you know, kind of Southern France, kind of Southern Spain, Southern Italy, they've all been seeing a higher incidence of mosquitoes. But mosquitoes that have the potential to carry malaria, and that's kind of the big one that everybody's keeping an eye on now. But not only that, you have kind of West Nile virus and all these other ones that are kind of, everybody's quite nervous about them spreading from, you know, Saharan Africa to Southern Europe. So it is kind of these borders between climates that I think will have a lot of emerging infectious diseases. But I think the more we learn and the more we know, I think we'll be able to mitigate those effects and kind of put precautions in place so that we can minimize those effects. But yeah, it's kind of, as I found from this study, it's still all a bit unpredictable as well, because this was only 64. Mm-hmm. And that's not actually a lot of heat waves when you think about kind of the complete unpredictability of climate itself. You mm-hmm. can have, like, there's so many other things that I wanted to do that I just didn't have time, but kind of doing repeated heat waves in quick succession and adding droughts, you know, and all of these other things, and also flooding, if you had different systems that had these, I think it becomes a really complex web. And that's why it's been really hard to make predictions, because you can have a model, But trying to add all of these things in and make the model work is definitely a challenge. But hopefully, I think we're making strides in the world of predictions. And maybe, who knows, down the line, we'll be able to have a better grasp on it.
Well, Niamh, you mentioned that there are measures we can put in place to protect ourselves, and particularly those regions that are particularly at risk. So what kinds of mitigation measures, what kinds of protections are already in place or need to be put in place?
Yeah, I think it's all kind of by a case by case, but I think being aware that, you know, the say for the example of the mosquito is there now, and just being hyper aware of knowing the effects of the malaria, knowing that, you know, there's always an off chance to have it. And then I think I'm definitely not an expert on this, so I'm not quite sure, because mine's literally, I've just been living in the lab for the last 4 years. But I think that kind of just knowing and being aware is a great thing to being prepared. And then from there, once, it's kind of like when you knew COVID was happening and everybody was kind of getting ready and stockpiling and doing everything like that. I think it's just kind of the being prepared is really important, and going into it with, you know, your eyes open. And I think that that's a really good place to start. But who knows what, you know, the actual precautions might be. Hopefully, you know, it'll be a minimized risk, but I suppose that's all yet to be seen.
Yes. We're speaking with Niamh McCartan, PhD candidate at Trinity School of Natural Sciences in Dublin, about the impact of extreme heat and heat waves on the spread of parasites. And if you have questions for Niamh about what climate change is going to mean for infectious diseases, questions about Niamh's work or other work going on to try to forecast the impacts of climate change on infectious disease and the spread of infectious disease, a number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at yourcall@kalw.org. And we have an email question. William in San Francisco writes, how does the host and parasite interact when temperatures rise? So Niamh, thoughts about how to describe that interaction?
Yeah, so I suppose kind of there's different ways when you say when the temperatures rise, but I suppose if that's kind of any of the heat waves, when you're at the kind of the lower level of the thing, so we kind of did a broad range that encompassed both the heat, the host and the parasite's kind of thermal tolerance. And at the lower end of that, when temperatures rose, then there was an increase in burden. So this was the reproduction within the host itself. So that meant that like the fitness of the parasite was more successful. But then when temperatures rose themselves at higher temperatures, so at higher baseline temperatures, closer towards the upper thermal tolerance of the host and the parasite, then it was actually detrimental to the parasite. So it was actually too hot for the parasite to remain viable and to actually reproduce within the host. So this is where, even when you say that the temperatures rise, it's really context dependent as to what temperature it's occurring at and how the temperature is rising. So it's kind of, it's that complexity that makes it hard to predict.
Mm-hmm. And Niamh, when you just think about this general topic of infectious diseases, parasites, extreme heat, climate change, what worries you the most? Where do you think we're most at risk, or we have the biggest chance of something really catastrophic happening?
I suppose it's kind of just that this is one host and parasite, and we can see that from this that it is quite complex. And this is only one kind of host and parasite. With no, say with other parasites, you might have more more intermediate hosts and more things that are affected. And you also have more hosts. So this only affects the little water flea, but you can have something that affects many, many animals. And knowing that heat waves are this complex to such a simple system, It's kind of hard to know what the heat waves will affect when you have this multiple host system that can affect many different hosts, but also have many different hosts within its transmission cycle. So I think that it's kind of that unpredictability that we'll have to see how it affects that. But I think that there's been a lot of work recently on this. So I am hopeful, you know, that the more we learn, the more we know, the more we can be prepared. And I think that that's really important. And this is just the tip of the iceberg for what we're going to be able to know, you know, in the next coming years. Mm-hmm. And so for that, I'm not quite as worried. I'm just more curious to see, you know, kind of what we'll know in 4 years' time.
Well, and of course, right now in the U.S., we're seeing major cuts in funding for infectious disease and pandemic research under the Trump administration. Is there a risk that researchers in your country, in Ireland, and across Europe are going to feel that impact? What do you think might be the effects of that U.S. cutback?
I know personally, we haven't really felt any of that yet, but I know kind of there's always that concern that it might have far-reaching impacts. But I personally haven't seen any of that yet, so I'm not quite sure. But, you know, there's always kind of that worry that funding is so hard to come by anyway. And when you hear that some of it is cutting, that you'll always be a bit nervous to see what the knock-on effects are. But hopefully, you know, I think everybody's still gearing together and trying to make it work. So I think it's not going to be as dire, hopefully, as we're all preparing for it to be.
Well, I certainly hope so. Any advice you would give to people who are concerned about protecting themselves from infectious diseases, certainly in general, but especially given the rising temperatures?
I think just kind of really educate yourself as to what's going on, and kind of if the scientists are saying be worried, I would be worried. But, you know, it's kind of one of those that I think as long as you keep, you know, an educated and open mind to what's going on and following the instructions of what people are recommending you do, I think then that, you know, you can only be as prepared as you are. It's not going to be a doomsday kind of thing and every man for himself. I think everybody's going to work together to try and minimize any other pandemic that's going to happen. But hopefully, I think, as I said, we'll be prepared. Fingers crossed.
Anything you'd like to see policymakers do in response?
I think that, you know, with policy-wide, as I said, it would be kind of to take into account if the scientists are saying that, you know, this is what it is, that hopefully, you know, to take that on board. But I'm definitely not on the policy side of things, so that's definitely not my expertise, and I wouldn't really be able to give a very good idea of what needs to be done. But I think that there are a lot of people out there who are really qualified to kind of branch that area between science and policy. And I think that they're the people that, you know, will really help to make a big difference.
Absolutely. Well, certainly understood. You're coming at it from the scientific perspective. And on that note, I just have one last question for you, which is you've described how you were just able to look, which is still a lot, 64 different heat events. What's the next step for the research, either for you or what you'd like to see happen in the field as a whole?
Yeah, so I was really interested to see. I have done 64 heat waves and 64 cold snaps. So in total, I did around 130 just under heat waves and cold snaps, but they were all at the individual level. So just one little host and then some dose of a parasite. But then I said, well, this normally doesn't happen. So what happens with populations? So I then had populations of buckets and I put heat waves and cold snaps onto those. So I'm kind of working through that data at the minute, but it is looking like it kind of scales up and it's really interesting. So that's kind of been the next part, but I'm actually submitting my PhD in 2 weeks. So I think I'm going to have a break after that and then see what I'll do. But I think that we have some really interesting work coming out of our lab as well about kind of these multiple heat waves, you know, kind of, or else random if they're not cyclically timed. And there's also, we have some evolution experiments going on, seeing a different, the parasite have been growing at different heat waves. So I think that, we've a lot of work going on at the minute, which will be really interesting to see the results. But I think, yeah, it'll be exciting to see kind of, this is a growing area of research. So even next year, it'll be all changed as well. And I'm
I'm
excited
sure.
to see what will happen.
Well, a well-deserved break. Good luck with the PhD application. Congrats again on the study. Thank you so much for joining us here on Your Calls One Planet series. Niamh McCartan, PhD candidate at Trinity School of Natural Sciences in Dublin. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And coming up next, we're going to talk about the impact of the Republican budget just signed into law on the nation's advancement of clean energy and what it means for the climate fight. So stay with us just after this short break.